The house was turned upside down, boxes lined the hallway, and books were off the shelves. He found Sarah in the kitchen, holding a wrench. Dressed in a white sleeveless t-shirt and a pair of ratty gray sweatpants, he thought that she had never looked more beautiful in her life. She was looking down the drain when he knocked on the door jamb. She turned, obviously not surprised, to see him. "Is this your idea of giving me some time?" she asked. He shrugged, tucking his hands into his pockets. She had a bright green band-aid covering the cut in her forehead and a white bandage around her arm where the glass had gone deep enough for sutures. How she managed to survive what she did was a miracle to Jeffrey. Her strength of spirit amazed him. The next song came on the stereo. 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. Jeffrey tried to joke with her, saying, "It's our song." Sarah gave him a wary look before fumbling for the remote. Abruptly, the music stopped, the silence replacing the song filling the house. They both seemed to take a few seconds to adjust to the change. She said, "What are you doing here?" Jeffrey opened his mouth, thinking that he should say something romantic, something to sweep her off her feet. He wanted to tell her that she was the most beautiful woman he had ever known, that he had never really known what it meant to be in love until he had met her. None of these things came, though, so he offered her information instead. "I found the transcripts from your trial, Wright's trial, in Jeb's house." She crossed her arms. "That's so." "He had newspaper clippings, photographs, that kind of thing." He stopped then. "I guess Jeb moved here to be close to you." She gave a condescending, "You think?" He ignored the warning behind her tone. "There are some other attacks over in Pike County," Jeffrey continued. He couldn't stop himself, even though he could tell from her expression that he should just shut the hell up, that she did not want to know these things. The problem was that it was much easier to tell Sarah the facts than for Jeffrey to come up with something on his own. He continued, "The sheriff over there has 4 cases he's trying to tie to Jeb. We'll need to get some samples for the lab so he can do a cross-check with the DNA samples they took at the scene, plus what we have from Julia Matthews." He cleared his throat. "His body's over at the morgue." "I'm not doing it," Sarah answered. "We can get somebody from Augusta." "No," Sarah corrected. "You don't understand. I'm going to hand in my resignation tomorrow." He could not think of anything to say, but why? "Because I can't do this anymore," she said, indicating the space between them. "I can't keep this up, Jeffrey. This is why we divorced. We divorced because I made a stupid mistake." "No," she said, stopping him. "We're not going to have the same argument over and over again. This is why I'm resigning. I can't keep putting myself through this. I can't let you hang around the periphery of my life. I have to get on with it." "I love you," he said, as if that made any difference. "I know I'm not good enough for you. I know I can't begin to understand you, and I do the wrong things, and I say the wrong things, and I should have been here with you instead of going to Atlanta after you told me about... after I read about what happened." He paused, then, "I know all that. And I still can't stop loving you." She did not answer, so he said, "Sarah, I can't not be with you. I need you."
"Which me do you need?" she asked. "The one from before or the one who was raped?"
"They're both the same person," he countered. "I need them both. I love them both." He stared at her, trying to find the right thing to say. "I don't want to be without you."
"You don't have a choice."
"Yes, I do," he answered. "I don't care what you say, Sarah. I don't care if you resign or you move out of town or you change your name. I'm still going to find you."
"Like Jeb?"
Her words cut deep. Of all the things she could have said, this was the cruelest. She seemed to realize this because she apologized quickly. "That wasn't fair," she said.
I'm sorry.
Is that what you think? That I'm like him?
No. She shook her head side to side. I know you're not like him.
He looked at the floor, still feeling wounded by her words. She could have screamed that she hated him and caused less pain.
Jeff, she said, walking toward him. She put her hand to his cheek, and he took it, kissing the palm. He said,
I don't want to lose you, Sarah.
You already have.
No, he said, not accepting this. I haven't. I know I haven't because you wouldn't be standing here right now. You would be back over there, telling me to leave.
Sarah did not contradict him, but she walked away, back toward the sink.
I've got work to do, she mumbled, picking up the wrench.
Are you moving?
Cleaning, she said. I started last night. I don't know where anything is. I had to sleep on the sofa because so much shit's on my bed.
He tried to lighten things up.
At the very least, you'll make your mama happy.
She gave a humorless laugh, kneeling down in front of the sink. She covered the drain pipe with a towel, then locked the wrench over it. Putting her shoulder into it, she pushed the wrench. Jeffrey could tell it wouldn't budge.
Let me help, he offered, taking off his coat.
Before she could stop him, he was kneeling beside her, pushing the wrench. The pipe was old, and the fitting would not budge. He gave up, saying,
You'll probably have to cut it off.
No, I won't, she countered, gently pushing him out of the way. She braced her foot on the cabinet behind her and pushed with all of her might.
The wrench turned slowly, Sarah moving forward with it. She flashed a smile of accomplishment. See?
You're amazing, Jeffrey said, meaning it.
He sat back on his heels, watching her take the pipe apart.
Is there anything you can't do?
A long list of things, she mumbled.
He ignored this, asking,
Was it clogged?
I dropped something down it, she answered, digging around the P-trap with her finger.
She pulled something out, cupping it in her palm before he could see it.
What?
He asked, reaching toward her hand. She shook her head, keeping her hand fisted. He smiled, more curious than ever.
What is it? He repeated.
She sat up on her knees, holding her hands behind her back. Her brow furrowed in concentration for a moment, then she held her hands in front of her, fisted. She said,
Pick one.
He did as he was told, tapping her right hand. She said, Pick another one. He laughed, tapping her left hand. Sarah rolled her wrist, opening her fingers. A small gold band was in the palm of her hand. The last time he had seen the ring, Sarah had been tugging it off her finger so she could throw it in his face. Jeffrey was so surprised to see the ring, he did not know what to say.
You told me you threw that away.
I'm a better liar than you think.
He gave her a knowing look, taking the wedding band from her.
What are you still doing with it?
It's like a bad penny, she said. Keeps turning up.
He took this as an invitation, asking, What are you doing tomorrow night? She sat back on her heels, sighing.
I don't know. Probably catching up at work.
Then what?
Home, I guess. Why?
He slipped the ring in his pocket.
I could bring dinner by.
She shook her head. Jeffrey.
The tasty pig?
He tempted, knowing this was one of Sarah's favorite places to eat. He took her hands in his, offering Brunswick stew, barbecued ribs, pork sandwiches, beer-baked beans. She stared at him, not answering. Finally, she said, You know this won't work.
What have we got to lose?
She seemed to think this over. He waited, trying to be patient. Sarah let go of his hands, then used his shoulder to help her stand. Jeffrey stood as well, watching her sort through one of many junk drawers. He opened his mouth to speak to her, but knew there was nothing he could say. The one thing he knew about Sarah Linton was
that when she had made up her mind, there was no going back. He stood behind her, kissing her bare shoulder. There should be a better way to say goodbye, but he could not think of one. Jeffrey had never been good at words. He was better at action. Most of the time, anyway. He was walking down the hall when Sarah called to him. "Bring silverware," she said. He turned around, sure he had not heard right. Her head was still bent down as she rummaged through the drawer. "Tomorrow night," she clarified. "I can't remember where I put the forks." This is Kathleen Early. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Blindsided by Karen Slaughter. This program was produced by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, Technical Director. Executive Producer Caitlin Gehring. Copyright 2001 by Karen Slaughter. Production Copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.